Okay, we're beginning the Mishnah here on the middle of Kaftet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah is continuing what we left off of from the previous Mishnah, which is that a person's not allowed to take Skar Lirot to Bikorot. There was one exception to that, which was Ki'ilu B'Yavne. Over there, the Gemara lays out the parameters in which he's allowed to take Skar, including, number one, that he be certified. Number two is that he's approved by Beit Din. And number three is that he's going to take Skar if he gets paid, not based on a success fee, but no matter what he does. And he can only take it once per animal, so we avoid any chashad that he's biased in his opinion because of the compensation that he's going to receive. Now the next Mishnah continues. Anotel skaro ladun. Someone who takes compensation in order to judge, adjudicate, dinav bitelim. Then his dinim are batel. Tosafot says, vatznan. Don't we have a Mishnah that mechuar dayan shenotel skar ladun el shi dinav din? That it's disgusting or inappropriate that a dayan takes compensation, but if he does such, then his din is a din. Over here, you're saying that anotel skar ladun, and then dinav bitelin. Tosfot answers that there's a difference in the type of skar that you're getting, because if you take ba'agar bitela delo muchach, aval de muchach shari. If it is that you're taking compensation for being batel, but it's not obvious that that's what you're doing, then over there, you run into the problem of dinav bitelim. On the other hand, if you're taking skar betala, which we're going to see at the end of the Mishnah, is permissible, then if it's mukhach and it's clear that's what you're taking the compensation for, then it would be mechu'ar, but his dinim would be dinim. So then, dinav bitelim also is interesting because it's in the plural. Which it doesn't just say that he totel skaro ladun, that the din is batel, but dinav bitelim. So there are one of two ways to read that. Either that means that everything that he was done is now nullified or not accepted because of the fact that he took skar over here. Or the other way to read it is that only if he does this on a recurring basis do we penalize him. If he does it up on a one-off basis, then we're not going to penalize him. But dinav bitelim is an indication of something that is a recurring problem. Now, even if you say dinav bitelim, you have to suggest or say that these are in situations or cases where the psak halacha is not a clear-cut psak halacha. Because if it's a clear-cut psak halacha, to say dinav b'teilim doesn't really mean anything. That's the halacha. The fact that he told you what the halacha is shouldn't have any impact on the outcome of the case. The situations have to be issues where there's either shikul adat, there is shudda d'dayna, areas where there's judgment or hakra'ah that needs to be made of the dayan, that's where he would unwind his dinim, because over there, he can no longer, quote-unquote, be trusted. Truth is, it's not really about trust. It's the fact that he violated this din, which we're going to see in a second in the Gemara, is a din d'oraita. And given that he violated the din d'oraita, the Chachamim penalized him that all his dinim are b'teilim. La'id, if he takes compensation in order to testify, edotav b'teilim, then his testimony is invalid. So here he's getting paid to come and testify. If he gets paid to testify, his testimony by definition is irrelevant. Lehazot, if he gets compensated to sprinkle the mei paraduma onto someone to be mitahir them, or the kadesh, even though it's out of order, it's just more likely that someone would compensate to get the hazah, but even if they paid him to make the waters of the paraduma to be mikadesh demayim, that he puts the afer paraduma into the mayim as mikadesh demayim, see if he gets paid to do such, meimav beimara, then the waters that he has here are like the waters of a cave. Tosafot says, then they're like mei mikveh and not mei ma'yan, which is that for the waters of paraduma, you need ma'im chayim, you need live spring waters. But mei ma'ara only suffice for mikveh, which is standing ashborin, collected water, that don't work for mei para. Rashi, others look at it much more negatively and say mei ma'ara, the Gemara says in many places, were sruchim. They were disgusting, they were putrid, and that's why they had to institute the takana that you're not allowed to basically take a shower after you go to the mikveh because the mikveh waters were so dirty and so putrid that people thought that the shower was being mitayer them and not the main mikveh. So they had to make an institution to not shower afterwards so people understood that it was the mikveh that was mitayer them. So then it would be meimav meimara means that they're worthless. They're waters that are disgusting means there's no value to them. Ephro, efer makleh, and his ashes are like the ashes of a staff or something that was burnt. This is the terminology that the Mishnah and the Gemara uses for what we call stam ashes. Anything that's stam ashes that have no importance to them, have no significance to them, they're called Efer Makleh. That's just regular ashes. So here he took something which had some sort of special status to it, whether it's Maim Chaim or whether it's the Efer Para. If he gets paid to do whatever it is that he's doing here, then it invalidates it and takes away the status of those items. So they're no longer live spring waters, and they're no longer considered to be Efer Para. Imaya Kohen, if this individual was a Kohen, and they were mitame'ehu mitrumato, and then the individual is asking him to do whatever it is that he needs to do here, and it causes him now to be tame'e, and then he can't eat from the truma, which is his main staple product that the Kohen eats, is the truma. He doesn't have any yusha, he doesn't have any nachala. The way he's sustained is through the trumot that are given to him by Klal Yisrael. Over here, if he had to become tame'e in order to service you or to take care of you, then in that instance, machilo umashko b'sacho. Then the person who caused that deficit to him, he has to feed him, give him to drink, take care of him. Or in essence, he's got to compensate for the loss that was caused or reimburse him for the losses that he sustained. So you can't take schar, you can't take compensation for the mere act of what you're doing. If you suffer sustained losses in doing such, then you can ask for compensation, you can ask for reimbursement. So over here, the Kohen, he can't take any monies for executing on, whether it's the sprinkling of the Mei Paraduma, or whether it's the making of the Mei Paraduma, because he's doing a mitzvah there, he can't ask for compensation for that. On the other hand, if in that process he has to then undertake to become Tamei, and now it's going to prevent him from eating Truma, which is his basic sustenance, and now he's not going to be able to eat, and he's going to have to go now shell out money to eat, then he can ask for compensation because there it's reimbursement for losses suffered in the process rather than schar for doing the mitzvah. And that then plays into what the Gemara is going to say now. If he was elderly, he can ask for a ride. He doesn't have to walk. If it's too hard for him to walk, then he can ask for a ride to get there. He's not getting compensated for doing it. It's the facilitating his ability to do the mitzvah, or he can't do it. Otherwise, he would have to hire a donkey to go. If he's going to suffer those losses, then he can be reimbursed for those losses. Then the last statement of the Mishnah, which is probably the most pivotal statement in the Mishnah, which is probably not connected to Zakein, but rather is a general statement, which is, Noten Scharo Kipoel. You're allowed to take monies like a worker. The Gemara asks, what does that mean? And obviously that will have implications on how you're able to be compensated for these items. All right. Minan Emile. How do we know that what the Mishnah says is true? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Damakro. The pasuk says, "Rei limadeti etchem chukim mishpatim, kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai, asod kein bekev haaretz, asher atem baim shama levishta." So the pasuk that they're quoting here is, "I taught you the chukim mishpatim, kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai, like Hashem had taught me. Ma ani bechinam, af atem bechinam. Just like I did it for free, so too you have to do it for free." It's not clear here who are the references or the antecedents of Ma'ani and Apatem. So it could be that Ma'ani b'chinam is Hashem speaking. Hashem says, just like I taught you, Moshe, everything for free, Apatem b'chinam, so do you, Moshe, and everybody else afterwards, also has to teach it for free. And that's re'ei l'maritei etchem kumish matim, kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai. Just like Hashem taught me, I taught you. That's one possibility. Or, Ma'ani b'chinam could be a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Just like I, Moshe Rabbeinu, taught you for free, Afatem b'chinam, so do, you have to teach for free. Now, how do we know that Moshe taught for free? It says, Rei l'marti etchem chukim mishpatim, kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai. So it says here that I taught you the chukim mishpatim like Hashem commanded me. Now, that could either mean that Hashem commanded me to teach you, and that's why I taught you, and there was no compensation, or, Tosfot in the Nedarim suggests over here, because Moshe Rabbeinu was an Ashir, he didn't need to get compensated. He didn't need the money. And therefore, when he taught, he must have taught it for free. And that's what it's saying here. Ma'ani b'chinam. Just like I taught you for free, afatem b'chinam. So too, you have to do it for free. Tanya Namiochi, we have a brayta that supports that, which is kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai. Ma'ani b'chinam, afatem b'chinam. So it could be that depending on which part of the pasuk you're quoting, then it could be that one of them is referencing to Hashem speaking to Moshe, and one of them is referencing to Moshe speaking to the people, Or you could learn both of them in the same way. They're quoting different halves of the pasuk, but that is a machloket rishonim over here as to whether the reference is to Hashem or to Moshe Rabbeinu. Either way, the outcome is that if you want to teach Torah, you have an obligation to teach it b'chinam, for free. How do we know that if he can't find someone to teach him without compensating, that he has to pay out of pocket in order to learn? Tamalomar emet kene. You have to acquire truth. Truth, as the Rashi says, reference to the Torah. And so therefore you have an obligation to compensate or to pay in order to learn Torah. Just like I had to shell out, I had to pay in order to learn Torah. So do I charge other people to learn the Torah that I learned? Tamalomar emet kene ve'altim kor. Even though you have to pay, you have to compensate in order to acquire emet, which is Torah, nevertheless, altim kor, you're still not allowed to sell it. So even though you have an obligation to learn Torah, irrespective of whether you have to compensate or not compensate for it, I mean, you have an obligation to learn Torah, and even if it costs you money, you got to learn Torah in that way. Nevertheless, you still have the obligation to teach Torah for free, and anybody who teaches Torah has to teach for free. Obviously, over here, someone is doing it either incorrectly or has some sort of dispensation to allow them to collect in order to teach the Torah, but then you're obligated to pay in order to acquire that Torah. But then once you've acquired it, you now have to teach it for free. Now, as far as the Manan and Mile over here, it's interesting. The Gemara asks a question, but doesn't really answer the question. The Gemara is asking, how do I know what's true in the Mishnah? What we saw in the Mishnah is true. And then it brings something about Limud Torah. Now, with regards to Limud Torah, that may not affect anything in the Mishnah, or at most, it affects only the first din of the Mishnah, which is the person who tells Karola Dun Dinat B'Teilim. Because over there, in order to adjudicate, you need to basically learn the Torah, teach the Torah, you're giving over Torah. So maybe, most, this is an explanation for the first din in the Mishnah. So therefore, there are those that suggest that the Issur D'Oraita only applies to Limud Torah and teaching of Torah, and that is the Notel Tzkaro Ladun is the only one covered by this Din D'Oraita. The remaining items in the Mishnah are mitzvot, and that is just a Din D'Rabbanan. That just like by Torah, it has to be chinam, so too by mitzvot, you have to do it b'chinam. So that's how some explain it. Others say that this is a binyanav. This is paradigmatic in nature. It's showing you that when it comes to what the Torah demands, you're not allowed to charge for what the Torah demands. We gave the example with the most expansive, most important item, which is Limud HaTorah, or teaching of Torah. Over there, if you can't charge for that, then certainly you can't charge for all the other mitzvot that are associated with the Torah. And therefore, they would believe that even Midoraita, all the items that are mentioned in the Mishnah, are disallowed because of the fact that you're not allowed to charge for engaging in Torah. That means whether you're teaching Torah or doing the mitzvot of the Torah. Now, Tosafot already speaks to Mani B'chinam, Afatem B'chinam. So Tosfot says, V'intomar, V'shtochad lo tikach, tichtov rachmono. What about the fact that the Torah in Shmot and in Dvarim says you're not allowed to take bribes, you're not allowed to take shochad, why do you need that? If you're not allowed to take any compensation whatsoever, why do you have to tell me you're not allowed to take a bribe? So Tosfot says, wait, there is a difference. Because there are two different issues here. One of them is where you take schar for the Torah effort and the adjudication that you're about to provide, you take compensation for that. That's what's restricted from by her Mishnah. Shochad is something different. Torah Shochad is when you are taking it from a particular individual in order to sway the judgment in their favor or look more favorably upon that person. And even if you are taking compensation and he says, adjudicate it properly, and you be mezakeh the zakai, mechayev the chayav, we still call it shochad, because of the fact that one person gave it to you. One person gave it to you, you're going to be biased in your judgment, even if that person told you, do it properly. Because by the mere fact that he compensated you and the other party didn't, that's shochad. That's not what we're speaking about over here. That's a different issue, that's a separate problem. The problem over here is if you take compensation from both parties, and you're taking compensation for doing the judgment of the adjudication, that's what we're speaking about here. That's independent of shochad, it has nothing to do with biased or being biased in the judgment. That's number one. Number two is, Ve'ein litmoa al dayanei gzeirot shebi Yushalayim. The Gemara in the end of Ketubot says that the dayanim in Yushalayim used to get compensated from Trumat HaLishka. Not only did they get compensated for judging, they got compensated out of the coffers of the Beit HaMikdash in order to adjudicate cases. The Lav Tama, the Agar Betela, the Muchach Shari. Because even without the principle that we're going to establish here, which is when it's clear that you're getting compensated for your unemployment or for giving up your work in order to do this, where you're allowed to take compensation, Hatam. Since they dedicated their lives entirely to this matter, so they didn't engage in anything else besides doing this, tell us what finally raises the issue. How do you get a parnasa? If you're going to spend your whole life teaching Torah, if you're going to spend your whole life engaged in these matters, then how is this person going to live? He has to live. He has to make a parnasa. You can't ask him to be a michinam and then say, okay, you figure out it. What do you have to do? No, the guy's got to live. So Tosfot says, even without Schar B'Teila, there's a separate issue, which is when you dedicate your entire life towards the Tzarchei Tzibur, then the Tzibur's got to compensate such an individual, because otherwise, how is he going to sustain himself? You're asking them to give up their entire life and all of their time to this matter, then you have to compensate them in order for that to be. Mash Noagim Achshav. Those that already raises the issue, Lumot Torah B'Schar, today where people learn, teach Torah B'Schar, Im Elo Malamit Pares Shari. Those that uses the same Svara to say that it is Mutar, that if you can't get Parnosa without doing it, it is Mutar. Bafilo Yeshlo, even if he has other means, Imu Schar B'Teila, the Muchach, Shemini HaKol HaSakav, Umasa Matan Shelo, Mistara D'Choshim Muchach Yoter Mikarno. It's even more so than Karno, which is the example in the Gemara and Ketubot, who took compensation. So that's what it says, you have a right to compensation for two reasons when you're teaching Torah. One is, if you're doing nothing else, then you gotta have a parnosa. We gotta provide for you, otherwise you can't ask the guy to die from starvation because he's teaching Torah and has to be bichinam. So that's not a fair or reasonable thing to ask of an individual. Secondly, he says, even if you do have parnosa from somewhere else, you can collect Schar B'Teila, which is that if you, instead of engaging in your own matters or your own business matters, you give up your time and engage in these matters, then you should be able to be compensated for that. And it is pretty muchach. It's pretty obvious that you're giving up what you had the opportunity to do in order to do this, then you should be able to be compensated for such a matter. The Oath, separately, the Gemara Nidarim speaks about the fact that when you are teaching youngsters, then you can take compensation for shimur, babysitting, uschar pisuk tamim, and for teaching them the truck, or basically the sentence structure of the Torah, which over there in the Gemara Nedarim, the Ran, the Tosafot note, that pisuk tamim may not be doraita, and therefore it may not be covered by ma ani b'chinam afatem b'chinam, and therefore you can take compensation. The nafkamina between these two reasons is a gadol. By a person who doesn't need babysitting, you can't charge them for babysitting. But you can't charge them for pisuk tamim if you're teaching them how to read, or you're teaching them how to parse the pasuk, or how to read the trump, then you can take compensation for that matter. Here, Tosafot already is raising a serious issue, which is the Gemara in a number of their places seems to indicate you can't get compensated. Gemara in Ketubot, the Gemara in Darim, they all seem to indicate you can't be compensated. So Tosafot comes up with two qualifications, one of which is, if a person dedicates their whole life to this, we must provide for them, and therefore you can get compensated. The other one is, if you're giving up something else, if you are foregoing some other opportunity of employment, then we have to compensate you for that. That we'll get to a second in the Gemara. The third is, if you're doing something that's not exactly involved with the Limud HaTorah, meaning aside from teaching Torah, you're also babysitting these youngsters. Aside from teaching the Torah, you're also teaching the person how to read. You teach them how to parse the puzzle. You teach them the truth. All of those are independent of the Limud HaTorah itself, and that you can charge for, that you can get compensated for. All right, I'm going to defer the discussion of the other Rishonim for a minute till we finish up the Gemara, and then we'll come back and discuss some of the other Rishonim, in particular the Rambam's view with regards to these matters. So now the Gemara continues and says, Lazot l'kadesh meimav me'ara efro efer makle. So that's what we saw in the Mishnah, that if he engages in these matters and gets compensated for it, it ruins it. It undermines what he's trying to do. Viraminu, is that really true? We have the Mishnah in Kedushin that says, HaMikadesh v'mei chatat, v'efer chatat. Someone who tries to engage a woman, meaning get erusin, kiddushin, through using the mechatat, the efer chatat, harizo mekudeshet. That works. And you do end up with kiddushin. Avo pishu Yisrael. Even if he is Yisrael. Even though he's not a Kohen that's doing it. So Rashi claims over here that the main people who did hazah of the para duma, or the main people who did the kiddush efer para, were Kohenim. And therefore when it says avo pishu Yisrael, means even though he's not the person who regularly does it, still he's Yisrael. Tosfot disagrees and says the avo pishu Yisrael references to the beginning of that Mishnah, which speaks about truma and other items that only Kohanim get, that if Yisrael uses those to be Mikadesh, it works. Even though he can't eat them, there's still value that's embedded in them that he can use as consideration for the Kiddushin, and therefore it's not about our Gemara, it's about the issues that are earlier on. Now, obviously you have a stira here, because, as Rashi notes, in order to have Kiddushin, you need consideration. Consideration means there's some monetary value here that you are providing that allows you to get to a pruta's worth that creates the Kiddushin. The consideration here seems to be the mechatat and the efer chatat. You don't own the mechatat. You don't own the efer chatat. The only thing you could be charging for is the service that you provided. So now you're foregoing the compensation of the service provided and being mikadesh with that foregone compensation. But that means you could be compensated. And that's the problem here. The Gemara is bringing from the kiddushin that sounds like you can be compensated. So where it says, I'm Rabbi, Lokash, that's not a problem. Kan b'skar hava'a umiloi, kan b'skar haza'a v'kiddush. There's a difference in parts of the process. The way Rashi defines the difference is, it's the difference between heksher mitzvah and mitzvah. When you're doing a mitzvah, you can't charge for the mitzvah. The heksher mitzvah, that you can't charge for. In essence, you can charge for the undertaking that you do, that you're not commanded by the Torah to do. You're not commanded by the Torah to go and draw the Mayim Chaim. It's a necessary step in order to do this, but you're not commanded to do it. You have to do it in order to have it, but you don't have to go run a mile out there, a kilometer out there to go get the Mayim Chaim. Torah doesn't tell you that. Torah tells you, you have to sprinkle on someone if they need it. You have to create the Para Duma's ashes in the water if someone needs it. But other than that, you don't have to do any effort or extend yourself in any way. And therefore, when you do such, you can be compensated for it. If you have to run to go get the Mayim Chaim, if you have to go run to Yerushalayim to get the Efer Para, then you could charge for that. Because that's not part of your tzivui. That's something where you're facilitating. Facilitating Hechsher Mitzvah that you can charge for. And that's the difference that Abai points out. That if it's Hechsher Mitzvah or facilitation, then you could charge for that. And that's Schar, you can be Mikadesh Tisha with. Kan B'Schar Azav B'Kiddush, which is the Mitzvah itself, that you cannot charge for. And he says, Dekanami, Diktoni. And it's meduyak in our Mishnah, because it says, Ketani Ocha, Lazotu L'Kadesh. The two things that are mentioned in our Mishnah are Haza'a and Kiddush. It doesn't talk about Hava'a. It doesn't talk about Miloy. Behotam Toni HaMekadesh, B'mei Chatat, U'be'efer Chatat. There it doesn't speak about the Haza'a or the Kiddush. It says, with the Mei Chatat, with the Efer Chatat. Now obviously again, they don't belong to him that he can be Mekadesh with them. What does that mean? The Mei Chatat and Efer Chatat? That means providing the mechatat, providing the efer chatat, facilitating those things, shmamina, the preparation, the extra mitzvah, that you're allowed to charge for. So both the verbs used in the two different places indicate there's a difference, and that difference has to do with whether you're doing the mitzvah or you're doing the extra mitzvah as to whether you're allowed to charge for it. If he asks the kohen to be involved in any of these processes, and then he makes him tamei, or he becomes tamei because of that, then he has to compensate for, reimburse him for the losses that he sustains by not being able to eat truma. Both the fact that truma is cheaper than chulin, and number two is, it may be the only thing the kohen has to eat is truma, and then he will have nothing to eat, and now he has to shell out to pay for items that he can eat. Where it says, a very simple question, how is it possible that the kohen agrees to do this? The kohen is restricted in becoming tameh. If he's restricted in becoming tameh, how can the other person ask him to become tameh and then compensate him? So he violates a mitzvah, he violates an avera of lo yitama, that you're allowed to become tamei, and now you're going to compensate him for it? He did an avera. He wasn't allowed to engage in this in the first place. He shouldn't have become tamei. Why is he allowed to become tamei? The answer is, the beta pras de rabbanan. Talking about a beta pras de rabbanan, we just discussed this recently in the Gemara. Beta pras is a field in which a kever was lost, and the field was plowed over. So the assumption is that the kever that was in the field got caught by the plow,
and the plow distributed the skeletal remains of the kever through an area of a Beit HaPras, which is 100 amot by 100 amot. It's the area that we assume that the plow would have taken this item before it falls away from the plow. So there's a certain area that is now considered this Beit HaPras. Now, number one, and we discussed this before, the only tumah we're worried about here is maga or masa. It's not really masa, it's hesed. Tumat ohel is no longer relevant. Tumat ohel only applies when you have a certain concentration of the mate in a single place. If you have the skeletal remains, the gemara, the mishnayot, and all those tell us that you need a certain amount of the bones or structure of the body to be together in order to be tamei tumat ohel. Once the plow takes the skeletal remains and distributes them, that's not going to happen. So tumat ohel is off the table. Now, what you're worried about now is tumat maga and tumat masar hesed. Tumat maga is if you come into contact with the bone, because there, for tumat maga, it only has to be the size of an etzem kiseora. It only has to be a barley-sized bone. That's pretty small. So even if the plow distributed the bones all over the place, if you come into contact with them, you're going to be tamei. Number two is hesed. In tumat amet, if you cause movement of the skeletal remains, you're also tamei. It means that whether you shake them, whether you carry them, but you don't have to be in direct contact. So that we have a problem also is if you're walking through the field and you move the earth underfoot and that moves the bone, then you're also going to become tamei. So those are the two issues that we're worried about is the maga and the masar, the hesed. That's the tumah we're worried about. Now, the beta pras is tumah derabanan because we don't know for certain where these items are and we don't know for certain that the person became tamei. The Rabbanan instituted in such a field where it's plowed over, you cannot go as a Kohen because of the fears that you'd have Tumat Magar, Tumat Hesed, and become Tameh. That's a Din de Rabbonan. What it seems like over here is that the Rabbonan waived it, B'makom Mitzvah. And that's exactly what Rashi says over here. B'makom Mitzvah, the Chamim permitted you to go into Beit HaPras with the following two conditions. Either, Damri Yudha Marav, Minapeach Adam B'Beit HaPras V'Olech. I mentioned these the other day when we spoke of Beit HaPras. One way to go through it is if you get down on your hands and knees, and you blow. You start to blow, because in that way you can see what's in front of you. You can see what's on the ground, and you can be sure you're not walking on a bone or touching a bone or moving a bone. That's one way to do it. Vit Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ami, Mishpeid Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Beit HaPras Shinidash Tor. If it's well-worn, the path that you're walking, you're also allowed to go through it. Because if it's already been walked on heavily, then whatever is there, the bone, has either been sunken in pretty deeply or ground up or moved to the side. That's usually what happens when you go on a road and you have pebbles or gravel. It all gets pushed to the side over time. And also, you're not going to have tumat hesed. Tumat hesed is when you have the ground moves, it also moves the bone. Over here, when you have a well-worn path, it's already impacted, compacted, and it's not going to move when you walk across it. So one of those two mechanisms are dinim that permits you then to go through the Beit HaPras. What Rashi says over here is, the Makom Mitzvah, when you have a mitzvah to do, we allow you to traverse a Beit HaPras in one of these two ways. Either you get down on your hands and knees and blow in front of you, or you go on across a well-worn path through the Beit HaPras. Rashi says, okay, once you do that, you're Tahor. So what are we worried about? Where did the Kohen become Tameh here? How come the Kohen's Tameh? You said, oh, he went through a Beit HaPras to Rabbanan. But he did these two qualifications, and those two qualifications make you tahor. So Rashi says something that the Gemara in Chagiga says, which is, Bokim lo say Pesach, mein Bokim lo chlei truma. Dispensation to use these mechanisms for getting through Beit HaPras is true by a Korban of Pesach. Korban of Pesach, which is a karet if you don't do it, and if you became tamei, it would be problematic to do the Korban of Pesach. So makom karet, lohi midu divrehem. In the face of karet, the Chachamim did not keep their Beit HaPras, and they allow you the dispensation to go through. That's not true by truma. That means if you traverse such a field, according to Rashi, even if you use these mechanisms, you're still tamei for truma. So exactly what happened here. He's permitted to go through, because it's makom mitzvah. But makom mitzvah, the Chachamim permitted you to go through such a field with one of these two mechanisms. But, despite the fact that you were permitted to do it, you became Tameh. Now that you're Tameh, you can't eat Truma. So that's the way Rashi reads this. You have a dispensation which allows you to go through a field when you shouldn't be able to go through the field. And that dispensation is B'makom Mitzvah, not B'makom Rishut. But even if you do engage in it, B'makom Mitzvah, the outcome is that you're going to be Tameh. That's the way Rashi reads it. The Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, is a very large Tosafot over here. It discusses Beit HaPras. anything you ever wanted to know about a Beit HaPras, or you wanted to discuss about it, this Tosafot really deals with it. And the Rabbeinu Tam has an unusual shita, which is, when the Gemara says in Chagiga, if you go through there, you're Tamei for Truma, that's only if you didn't, Tamateu Trumato, Hainu Sholech Belo Nipuach. That's only if you didn't use one of the dispensations over here. Meaning, the way the Rabbeinu Tam reads the Gemara is, the Mokum Mitzvah, you can walk straight through a Beit HaPras without any of these dispensations. Just walk through it. If you walk through it, B'makom Mitzvah, that's allowed. B'makom Rishut, you're not allowed to walk through it. But you have options. Even B'makom Rishut, if you get down on your hands and knees and blow it, or it's a well-worn path, even B'makom Rishut, you can walk through there and you're going to be Tahor the Gamre. You're not Tameh. So what the Rabbeinu Tam says is, when are you Tameh? When you didn't check? You walked through it and you didn't do any checking. You just walked through the Beit HaPras. It's Tumah D'Rabbanan. The Rabbanan waived that B'makom Mitzvah. B'makom Mitzvah, you can walk through without doing anything. One of the proofs is, the Gemara in Brachot says, Kohen can walk through a Beit HaPras to accompany an Avel because of Kavod HaBriyot. The Rabbeinu Tam says, what type of Kavod HaBriyot is that? The Avel's walking through, and the Kohen's down on his hand and knees and blowing and going through there. That's not accompanying. The guy is behind the guy blowing his way through there. He's not really accompanying the Avel. So what he says is that it's got to be a dispensation that allows you to walk through normally without doing anything. And that's B'makom Mitzvah. There you can walk through without doing anything. You will be Tamei. That will be the outcome. You won't be able to eat Truma, but you're allowed to walk through. You want to walk through for any other reason? You got to take up one of these dispensations, either Menepeach or Dash. Now, the big problem with Rabbeinu Tam Shita is our Gemara. Our Gemara brings these as the options to go through. Sounds like B'makom Mitzvah, which is our Mishnah, you need to use one of these options. Because otherwise, how is it a proof to what the Gemara is saying? So the Rabbeinu Tam reads it as the following. All these things show you is that it's a din d'rabbanan. The fact that you can go through b'minapeach, or that you can go through when it's well-worn, b'makom reshut, shows you that it's the rabbanan. Because the rabbanan waived the din at Beit HaPras when you have these items. So all the Gemara is proving now is that it's a din d'rabbanan, and when it's a din d'rabbanan, then you can walk through without even doing any of this stuff when it's b'makom mitzvah. So that's a big chiddush of the Rabbeinu Tam. The Baal Yad Tosafot bring from the Rebbe that they don't think the Rabbeinu Tam is right. And therefore, they come up with three categories of Beit HaPras. Ashtiyeh Shlosha, Inyanim Beit HaPras. Lo'osei Pesach, for someone who's going to do the Pesach. L'kulei Alma, according to everyone. And a Nazir, according to Beit Shammai, which is based on a Mishnah, Machloket Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, so according to Beit Shammai, Minapeach V'Tahor. You get down on your hands and knees, you blow it, you go through, and you're completely Tahor. L'umol Torah, V'lisaisha, V'ladun, U'lalar Er, U'lakavod HaBriyot. Sharei litamei b'lo nipuach. You can walk through there without blowing, without doing anything, and become tamei. You're allowed to become tamei b'derabanan to not be able to eat truma anymore. Those are special dinim. As the Baal Tosafot say over here, the Shultot doesn't agree with this, but the Tosafot in other places notes the fact that the Gemara has a dispensation for learning Torah, getting married, and parnosa sometimes, that allow you to do certain things that you're not allowed to do all the time, including leaving Eretz Yisrael. Not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara brings that for these three items, you can leave Eretz Yisrael. According to the Shiltot, that means these and any other mitzvah. These are just examples. Tosafot says these are three serious issues. These are big mitzvot. Since they're big mitzvot, it's a special dispensation. And he says similarly over here, these are special mitzvot, and therefore when the Gemara allows you to go through a Beit HaPras, you're allowed to go through there without doing anything, without being nipuach, without doing anything else. B'lo shar mitzvot, any other mitzvah that is not on this high level of mitzvot, edut, like our Mishnah over here, for edut, for dayan, hachashari yedei nipuach v'tamei. You're allowed to do it by blowing, and you are tamei, like Rashi said over here. So he has three categories, so he doesn't completely dismiss the Rabbeinu Tam, but he creates three levels of Beit HaPras and how you deal with it. If you're dealing with Pesach, special dispensation, if you go through the Pesach and you do it by Nipuach, or walking on the Dash part of it, you go through and you're Tahor. That's the Gemara in Chagiga. If you go for special mitzvot, high level mitzvot, which you have special dispensations, then you're allowed to go through there, even without doing Nipuach, even without doing anything else, but you will be Tamei on the other end. If you want to go through for a regular mitzvah, like our Mishnah, then you have to do the Nipuach, you have to do the Dash part of it, but if you do it, you're also going to be Tamei. And so that's what the scenario is here. The Kohen's Tamei, because he's permitted to go through for a mitzvah, but he's Tamei, either going to the Rabbeinu Tam, because he did nothing and walked through there, or he's going to Rashi and the Baal Yad Tosafot, because you didn't eat puach, or you went on a path that was nidos already. Nevertheless, you're tamei. That's the outcome. You're allowed to do it, but you're going to be tamei in the end. Or inami. The easier answer is, I don't know why they don't bring this as the first answer, b'shar tumot, t'lom mazair alayu. A kohen can come on tamei, but not tamei to matameit. A kohen is only restricted in becoming tamei to matameit. If he comes into contact with an avela, he's tamei, but he's not violating any isur of tumah. Tumah in the Torah and Parshat and more is you can't become tamei to matameit. That's the only restriction. So as long as it's other tumah, then it doesn't matter. So if he touches an avela, if he comes into contact with a sheretz, a zav, anything like that, that tumah is not restricted from becoming tamei. So if he needs to do this, he has to pass through some place that he's become tamei tumat avela or tumat sheretz. He can do that. There's no restriction against him becoming tamei, but it will preclude him from eating tumah. Now the truth is, maybe the Gemara didn't go to this first because there's only tumat erev, which means by the time you get to the end of the day, the sun sets, you can already eat the tumah. So the amount of time that you're going to be out eating tumah is limited, and therefore maybe that's not the best case. By tumat tamei, where you're going to be tamei for 7 days, that's a significant undertaking in order to do a mitzvah, and there you may more likely have to compensate because there's bigger losses in that case. Right now, the Gemara gets back to the last line of the Mishnah, which is the most important line. And then the last part of the Mishnah, which is what the Gemara is commenting on, is that he's allowed to take sechar kepoel, like a worker. Gemara says, what does that mean, kepoel? Tana kepoel batel. So already have a bright that it says not like a poel, but like a poel batel. That's not doing anything. Amar Abaye, kepoel batel sho'oto melacha. It's a poel who's batel from that work. Rashi and Tosafot over here argue about what that means. Rashi says that you have any profession, and this becomes subjective then. Each individual has a profession, and if you're asking him to give up the compensation that he would have earned for that profession, you now got to compensate him. How do you compensate him? Well, you offer him the option. For instance, if someone has a profession that they have to engage in heavy labor, and you say to him, listen, I'll pay you a percentage of your normal salary, but you can sit home. So most people will say to you, you know what? It's worth it. I will not take a full day's pay, but meantime, I'll have my day off. I can do whatever I want with my day instead of having to work hard. So a person will take 20%, 30%, 70%, some percentage of their salary they will take in order to not work and still get compensated. But there may be somebody like what Rashi calls a nukev margaliot, a diamond cutter, someone who cuts pearls, puts holes in pearls, which is a very fine malacha, doesn't take a lot of undertaking, it's not heavy exertion, he gets compensated a lot for doing very little because of his skill set. Then, if you ask him to stay home and not get compensated, he's going to want a good percentage of his value in order to do that, because he can show up to work, do whatever it is, not work so hard, quote unquote, the physical labor, not work so hard, and get compensated. So if you tell him, sit home on the couch or go to work, he'll say, I'd rather go to work. So until you get to 80, 90% of his salary, he's not going to do that. So that's what Rashi says is going on here. Kapolo batel me'oto malacha. You got to figure out the differential between an individual who had been compensated in this instance for whatever he's doing and the optionality for not going to work and getting compensated. What type of discount would you take on your salary in order to do that? What's obvious from the compensation scheme is what I just said, which is that certain work involves exertion and labor. Other work involves skill set. And so obviously people pay more for a skill set, which is that the person who's cutting diamonds or who is putting holes in the pearls, he's not any more exerting himself than the other individual. He's actually doing less work. So why are you compensating him more? Because of the skill that he learned, because of that which he did in preparation for it. So that will become important later on. I'm just pointing that out, that that's true in general. When it comes to labor, you pay for people's skill sets sometimes, not for the actual effort or undertaking that they are engaging in. Over here, Rashi claims that the differential is the difference between what he would have taken had he worked normally versus if he sat home and he would have done it. Tosafot disagrees and says that the compensation has to do with kapoel batel. Batel means batel. What happens if he did nothing? It means that if he could have gone out and been compensated, and instead you just stay home and do nothing, the difference in pay is what you would have gotten had you gone to work. And the other side of that is, if you do nothing, what you would have gotten compensated. Now, it might be that there is some small compensation for Kapal Batel, which is that you can hire a guy to watch the fields or something like that. So there might be some baseline amount that the person would get paid, minimum wage of sort that he could engage in that you would then subtract from the total that he would have gotten. Otherwise, Tosfot says it's just what he would have gotten paid. And now he's not getting paid that. That's a differential in pay that you have to make up for because he lost that. He lost the capacity to get that payment and now he's getting nothing. So you have to make up that compensation. Rashi says that you have to make up for the amount that he would have taken had he sat home and done nothing. So you don't have to pay him the full amount of his pay. You have to pay him some percentage of his pay that he was willing to take in order not to engage in payment. Tosfot also brings from the Rabbeinu Chananel the difference between what person charges for doing something during the regal versus the off-season. For instance, if someone is a weaver during the rest of the year, he charges a chatzi sela. When it comes to the regal, when there's too much business and there are too many people there, he raises his prices and he charges more. That's what it's saying here, that you're not allowed to take compensation as if you were doing it during the regal, but you're allowed to take compensation as if you were doing it during the off-season. So that's the way the Rabbeinu Chananel explains it, that you can only get compensated as if it's off-season, not as if it's on-season. Although the Balei Tosfot say, they don't know where the Rabbeinu Chananel got that from, and how it fits into the language of the Gemara at all. But that is a different view as to what it means, Kegoyel Patel Mi Malachazo. Alright, so that gives you the first permission in terms of getting compensated. Person can compensate if he has a skill set. Now obviously Tosafot's battling something else, which is, this indicates he has something else to do. Meaning he has a skill set, he's trained in something, and he's foregoing that ability in order to do this on your behalf. So he should be compensated, because he's Batel. What happens if the person has no skill set? Or he's not doing anything else? So then why should he be able to get paid? Or why is it permissible then to get paid? So Tosafot is obviously addressing that, which is the guy's giving up his whole life to do this. The answer is because Bameli Pranes. How is he going to make a living? He can't make a living doing this unless you compensate him. That's what Tosafot said. He went through the different stages. He said, if you're doing this and you're not doing anything else, then we got to compensate him just because he's giving up his life to do this. So you got to compensate him for doing that. The other way was, if he has Parnasa, then you pay him Skar Bateva because he has other options and you got to pay him for the deficits of giving up those other options. The last one he spoke about was if it was a case where there was something besides the Limud Torah that was involved. So all of these are going to become the mechanisms by which we pay people to teach Torah, we pay people who are learning Torah, is these three things that the Balei Tosafot mentioned. The first of which is if there are ancillary items that are not directly involved with the Torah, like we talked about Pisuk Tamim, Shimur, babysitting. Those are things you can get compensated for. Or possibly preparation, which is what we saw with the skill set here. You pay somebody with a skill set because they prepared in order to have that skill set. That preparation you might be able to get compensated for because it wasn't the teaching, it wasn't the actual conveyance of the Torah, it was making you into the expert or the skill set that you have. So maybe there you could take compensation for that. And the other possibility is schar b'teila, which is if you give up what you would have otherwise earned, which is an important factor. I remember I had a Rebbe many years ago in Tel Aviv who went to speak to Rav Shlomo Zalman. He was a person that was very bright and he had taken physics and then he was on the way to becoming an astrophysicist and then he went on to go teach Torah. And he went to Rav Shlomo Zalman to ask him if he could finish his degree. Why did he want to finish his degree? So that he could get paid Skar B'teila. I mean that he wasn't going to go practice, but he wanted to say, I have a real profession. I would have been compensated well. Now that I'm giving that up in order to teach Torah, there really is Skar B'teila. And Rav Shlomo Zalman told me he should do it. So he went. He taught him Machon Lev also for many years afterwards, but he's an astrophysicist, and he did it so that he could get compensated for Skar B'teila. So that's like a higher level than what the Tosfot's mentioning. It's not like, what else is he going to do? We got to pay him. No, it's that he has a real skill set, and he's giving that up in order to teach Torah. Now you need to compensate him for being that Skar B'teila. Now, I sent out these Makorot last night. You can take a look at them. I'm just going to try to give you some of the highlights. There's the Gemara here. There's the Gemara in Nidarim. Tosfot Daran there. There's Gemara in Chulin. The Mishnah Navot. And now I'm going to speak to you about the Mishnah Navot because here the Rambam says something and comes out very strongly against this issue of getting compensated for learning Torah or for teaching Torah. I quote the Mishnah Navot. There's one in Perek Bet, Mishnah Bet, which is Rabbi Gamliel ben Osher Yudan Asi Omer, Yafet Talmud Torah im Derech Eretz. He's speaking exactly to this issue. If you're just learning Torah and you have no work, then it ends up in a bad place. Because either you're not going to be able to learn anymore, or you're going to have to do something that's underhanded in order to get compensation, and it's going to cause avon. So it's not worthwhile to do that. You need to have Torah im derech eretz. That's one. There's also the Mishnah Avot, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Hay. It says, very good, Tzadok Omer, Al Tassem Atarah Leitgadelba. When it comes to the Limud Torah, you shouldn't use them as a crown to elevate your status. Lo Kardum Lachbor Bam, and not a spade to dig with them. V'kachaya Hilal Omer, Tishtama Bataga Chalaf. If you use the crown of Torah, you're going to pass away. Halamata, Kol Enem Itivrei Torah, Notel Chayav Min HaOlam. Anybody who gets benefit from Torah and from teaching of Torah, he loses his life. And here goes the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot. It is worthwhile reading because it's classic Rambam, but a Rambam that is so powerful. He starts out like this. Varatziti lo ledaber bezatzi boy. I already want to not speak about this. The fishu muvar. It's so obvious. Also, I know what I'm about to say, most of Gedolei Torah are not going to like. And maybe none of them are going to like it at all. I have to speak and I'm not going to be silenced. And I'm not going to give deference to those that came before me and those that are present now. So you know that Rambam's about to say something that is not what the standard practice was or what people thought. And he says, Klomar al tachshva kli leparnasa. You can't use Torah as a mechanism for making a living. He says the mission is so obvious that people are closing their eyes to this. Throw it after the corpses. They don't even consider it. He says, and they don't understand what's being said here. Ani avarim. I'll make it clear what's said here. And now they put the pressure on individuals or on the community as a whole. He now made it into a fixed thing that you have to support these lomei Torah, lomdei Torah. They cause individuals and communities to support them. And people believe this silliness. That you have to do it, and you're obligated to support these people who are learning Torah. That you somehow have to help out chachamim, students of the Torah, and anashim that are oskim b'Torah, and Torah is their livelihood, that you, for some reason, now obligated to support them. It's a whole mistake. There's not a single word in the Torah that justifies this practice, but there's no leg to stand on. Pretty strong words. I'm skipping through this. As you can see, it's a very long Rambam. I'm just giving you the highlights. Number two. Maybe they should think about the fact that it's a huge Chilul Hashem. People are thinking now that it's a profession. It's like one of the other professions. And people will look at it. It's not such a good profession. It doesn't pay so well. There are better professions. If they look at it that way, it's going to be a trade-off in that way. And because of that, now, not only are they doing something wrong, now they're being mechalal Hashem, and they're being bozeh divrei Torah. And then he goes through the fact that all of the Tanaim and Amoraim have jobs. They all have professions. They were nosei tzim, they were a sandar, they all had professions aside from their limuda Torah. He gives two other examples of stories in the Gemara where people were very upset or didn't want to accept any compensation for their being Talmidei Chachamim or their status as a Talmid Chacham. And then he brings at the end, Vamnam, Advar Sheituru HaTorah, the Talmidei Chachamim. There is something that is mutar. Sheitnu Mamon LeAdam. They can give their money to someone else. Yaselem Shchura Bo B'chirato. And that person will invest on their behalf. Im Yirtzeh, if he wants to. V'osezeh Shol Shchar HaKach. And the person who does that gets rewarded for that. And that's what's called in the Gemara, Matil Malai Lekis Talmidei Chachamim. Someone who gives into the pockets of the Talmidei Chachamim, which is that they do business on their behalf. They become the Chachamim investors, passive investors with these individuals. And as passive investors, these individuals go out and they do business and they give profits to the Talmidei Chachamim. So in essence, they're working for free. They're not charging any fee for their services for the investing. But it's not their money. It's the Talmidei Chachamim's money that they're investing, and the Talmidei Chachamim's money that's at risk over here. He's not obligated to do such. If he chooses to do such, then he gets rewarded for it. That is the only way that he permits it. Or they can get special dispensations like we saw in the Gemara in Baba Batra, that when it comes to the shuk, the Talmidei Chachamim get the first chance to open up the shop, they get discounts on taxes, and then he speaks about the fact that the Gemara in Baba Batra speaks about that they are exempt from certain taxation, parsonage. So they get certain dispensations, but there's nowhere ever that they're allowed to collect money or impose on the tzibor to take money on their behalf. The Rabbeinu Yona, also commenting on a vote over there, says, Avamishu bari, anybody who's healthy, v'yachol asot melacha, asur lo lehenot b'kvod ha-Torah kol ikar. You're not allowed to get any benefit from kvod ha-Torah. The Rambam, in not only Perish of Mishnah, which we read, but also in the Mishnah Torah, which is his Psak Halacha, speaks the same way. He says, kol masim alibo, she'asok b'Torah, anybody who thinks that they can engage in Torah, v'lo yaseh melacha, and he won't do any work. V'itparneis min atztaka, and he'll get supported by charity. Harizeh chilelat Hashem. That's a chilul Hashem. Ubizat the Torah, and he has denigrated the Torah. V'chiba ma'or adat, and he's extinguished the light of religion. V'garam ra'a le'atzmo, causes negative things for himself. Notel chayav min olam haba, and he loses his olam haba. Another one. Maleh gedola hi l'mishu mitpaneis mimaseh yadav. Person who gets compensated, makes his own living, it's a big deal. Umidat chasidim rishonimi. Or in essence, you should work. That's what he's saying here. The Hagot Mamani quotes, Yafetam Lataraim Der Cheretz. So that's the Rambam over here. The Rambam is commented on by the Kesef Mishnah, and the Kesef Mishnah already starts to backpedal on what he's saying. He says, the Rambam spoke a lot about this, but I have differences in opinion about what he is saying, and he starts to go all through all the reasons of the Rambam, as to why maybe that's not the case, or why it's not necessarily true. And he speaks about that Mishnah in Avot that says you're not allowed to use Torah as a mechanism for Gedulah and all that. And he says that's only if you have ulterior motives when you go to learn. It's only when you started out that you did something like that, that that's problematic. But if after you've learned and you did it L'shem Shamayim, now you want to get compensated for it, maybe that's okay. Maybe that's not a problem. And then he says, V'zeh nechlak l'shlosha chalakim. This is three different areas. Imshi tol me'avot habanim schar l'lamed banav olulamdo. A person who takes compensation to teach children, to teach that individual themselves. Imshi yoshev l'omed v'chol haba l'karvai l'malachai yikarvei l'torah ul'mitzvot. Or a person goes and sits, and anybody who wants to go to work, they'll bring him to do Torah mitzvot. Imshi yoshev l'dan din emit l'amito. Or he's a judge adjudicating cases. He says, we all learned that out from the Gemara in Ketubot, that you're allowed to take compensation for any one of these items. So that's what we just discussed before, that if you're teaching, you can get it for schar shimur, schar pisuk tamim, preparation. If you are someone who is doing something that helps people out, that are doing malacha, you're providing a service of sort that's not just the limud Torah, or someone who is giving up their livelihood in order to be done, or in order to adjudicate, all these people are entitled to compensation. These are things that the tzibur needs. These are people who the tzibur needs. The tzibur needs a rav. The tzibur needs a dayan. So therefore, it should be something that the tzibur supports. If not, we're going to be lost. You're going to be like a tzon shein lehem roeh. So you can't say to the tzibur, oh, don't pay anybody, but then you're not going to have the services that the tzibur needs, including a rav of a shul, including the rav of the tzibur, including dayanim. They need people who are going to be the guiders, the paskiners of the locha. And we need students who can fill his shoes afterwards. If you pay just for a rav and you don't pay for students, then you're never going to have a replacement. You're going to have a one-time person, and that's it. And you can force the community to pay for such people. If someone has no other way of getting parnasa, whether it's from the students themselves, or whether it's from the community, in order to adjudicate, You take compensation as long as there's no bias, there's no problem, all the rules that we have. If Shalomar should come out, Rabbeinu Kanish, in Ladam Lifrok O Melachame Alav, Kadelit Pranes Min Abriot. So now he tries to reinterpret the Rambam to say that the Rambam's really saying is that if a person has the opportunity to make a living, he shouldn't throw himself onto the tzibor and say, you take care of me. The better option is to learn a profession that you can sustain yourself. If that's sufficient, then great. If it doesn't make up what he needs for a living, then he can get compensation from the tzibor. If the tzibor takes up all his time and he can't do anything, then he can take compensation for that. So first of all, he says you should get a parnosah. You should find a way to support yourself, because then you have a right to make a claim of giving up that parnosah. Number two is, if that parnosah gets you part of the way there, then at least that helps, and then the remainder, they'll fill in. And if you can't get anything, then they can fill in for you. He says, and maybe if that's not what the Rambam said, which is likely not what the Rambam was saying, he says, now he takes out the Rambam exactly what the Rambam said. Rambam says, I'm going to say something nobody else says and nobody else likes. So the Beit Yosef says back to the Ketz Mishnah and says, that's right. You know what? When you don't know what the halacha is, look at what the practice of the people is. The practice of the people is against the Rambam over here. Everybody got paid, whether it was before the Rambam and after the Rambam. And even if you want to say the Rambam's right, and the halacha is like it, nevertheless, the Chachamim decided that it's not going to work. Sometimes you have to violate the Torah in order to be Shomer the Torah. We don't compensate, we're not going to have these people in our tzibur, we're not going to have these Talmidei Chachamim. If we don't have them, everything's going to be lost. So it's worthwhile giving up that one halacha in order to sustain the Torah as a whole. If people were learning and teaching, didn't get compensated, we wouldn't have Talmidei Chachamim. They can't learn Torah properly. Then we'd lose the Torah. And since now we have these abilities and the tzibur is paying for it, now we have real Talmidei Chachamim. We have real sustenance of the Torah. Because you can already see the sentiment that's coming against the Rambam, which is both the practice as well as the necessity that we have these people in our tzibur, and therefore they are getting compensated, because otherwise we're not going to have these individuals. It's somewhat along the lines of what the Rambam Tosafot said. So if you're asking these people to dedicate their lives to do this, to be proper, and to be Talmidei Chachamim, or to adjudicate, or take care of the tzibur, you got to help them. You got to give them parnasa. And that parnasa is the obligation of the individuals of the community, and they need to pay for it, and they need to be mifarnesed. And so he takes on the Rambam pretty strongly. But it's very interesting. You can read it yourselves in the Mikorot. I brought you one thing from the Igrot HaRambam, which is a letter to his brother when he's about to go off to India. Another one is the last letter that Rambam receives from his brother on his fateful trip to India. And the third source that I brought you is the Igrot HaRambam, which is an Igeret to Rabbi Yefet Bar Eliyahu in Akko. And there he mentions the fact that his brother had passed away. Now, what comes out from all these stories is that the Rambam actually was supported. The Rambam himself did not have a profession. He was supported by his brother. His brother, who was a merchant, paid for the Rambam and took care of the Rambam. And his brother goes out to sea, works as a merchant, and he starts running the trade route to India, between India and Egypt. Unfortunately, on one of his trips, the boat that he took sunk, and he dies on the trip. After that, the Rambam speaks about himself, that he was left despondent, depressed. He was in a tremendous depression, that's what it sounds like from the letters, but also he was in dire straits. The person who supported him was now gone. So it's interesting here, which is the Rambam's view, how much is it colored by his experience that he had? Is it colored by the fact that his brother was supporting him, and that the brother was supporting him, then it fell away, and then the Rambam was left without anything, and that's what colors his whole view with regards to this? Or does the Rambam think that what he did with his brother was different than what he's describing over there? Remember, the Rambam said you could join in a investment with a merchant, and that's okay. It's not clear here that the Rambam was investing his own money. It sounded like his brother was compensating or taking care of it. Might be that his brother was doing it willingly. It wasn't that he was imposing on the tzibor. His brother did it as like a Yisachar Zvulun type of relationship. But what is clear is the Rambam is left despondent and in dire straits, and therefore the Rambam has to go out to become a doctor in order to support himself. And then maybe that very much colors his view about Lomdei HaTorah and having a profession and a way to support yourself outside of just the Torah. I'll just read you a quick quote from it. He says that after I got the bad news, this terrible news that my brother had died, Iptirat Tzadik Zatzal, calls his brother at Tzadik Zatzal, Shutababa Yom Hodu, that sunk, drowned in the Indian Ocean, Ubiyado Mamon Rabli Velo Velachirim, a lot of my money, other people's money, and his own money. Beniach Bat Ktana Vamanato Etzli, and he had a young daughter and his widow that were left. Nisharti Arkarab Kamo Shana Miyom Shigia Shmoara. And now, even a year after I got this news, no fellow amitab shchin ra ubudaleket b'duan levav. Said he's bedridden since he got the news for a year. He's got fever. He's just left there in a state of disbelief. And I almost died. Basically, he's so despondent. It's now 8 years later. I'm still mourning over the loss of my brother, and there's no consoling me. How can I be consoled? Ben al birkai gadal. Sounds like it was his younger brother. He grew up on my knees, meaning that I raised him. He was my brother. And the student. He would go out and make money. And I sat back here, learning. He was so smart that he got things very quickly. He knew everything. It could be midayek out of words. My greatest simcha was seeing when he came back from his business trips. All my happiness is gone, and now I'm left in this foreign land. Anytime I see his handwriting, anything that he wrote, it brings me back these feelings of anguish and pain. The quote that Yaakov says about Yosef, for we're not for the Torah that is my great pleasure, I would have been lost already. I would have been gone. So now, it's very, very interesting that he speaks about this issue that his brother was supporting him. He does mention that he had money with his brother, which makes it sound maybe it was like he was investing with his brother. On the other hand, he says specifically that his brother was out making the money, and he was Yosef Ubetach. So the Rambam does have that experience, and how much that influenced his view and his life is also very interesting. Afterwards, I brought the Shuta Tashfetz, which goes through piece by piece. There's a number of the Shutim of the Rambam's whole claim, and tries to dismantle and show why he's incorrect, or why it's not right what we do. And then at the end, I brought the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. The Be'er Halacha and Siman Kuf Nun Vav speaks about this, that you have to go out to work and you have to make a parnosa and learn Torah. And he says here, Katvua Svarim, Shuzeh Ne'amar L'Klal HaOlam. That's for regular people. She'en Kulam Yecholim L'Skot Alot Medraga Ramazo Yot Askam Rak B'Torah L'Vada. We don't have the capacity to just dedicate their lives to Torah. Ba'anashim Yechidim Yecholim Matzei B'Chol Eit Bofen Zeh. There are individuals who can't put themselves in that position. And Hashem will provide for them or take care of them. And if there are people that are willing to support them, then for sure that is permissible, because Yisachar and Zvulun already proves that such methods or such partnerships are allowed. So anyway, you can take a look at this. It's obviously not a new controversy about Limud HaTorah and support for Limud HaTorah, and whether both you can compel the tzibur to do such, or whether you can demand that the individuals or the tzibur support such an institution, or whether people have to go to work and have to support themselves. It's all brought in these mikorot, and it's an age-old controversy. All right, next Mishnah. Chashud al bechorot, en lukhim imenu basar tzvayim. Someone who is chashud al bechorot, you can't even buy from him meat of a tzvi. The reason that it's meat of its feet, the Gemara will say, is because it's very domeh la'egel. It has a similar look to that of an egel, And therefore, he could trick you, he could deceive you by saying that it's the basar of tzvaim, even though it's really basar ego. So you can't even buy basar tzvaim for him. What is chashud on? Rashi says, korona chashud atil mumim b'chor. Someone who is chashud to put mumim in b'chorim in order to be able to eat them, in order to make them into chulin. That's the chashad over here. Others suggest that the chashad over here is that he sells b'chor as if it's chulin. It's not that he's doing something to the b'chor to make it now accessible, but he's selling a b'chor tam as chulin. He's selling a b'chor b'amum without being checked by a chacham. Meaning they're doing things that are illegal. That could be the possibility. Rashi tempers that and says that it's just a case here where he is matumum in a b'chor, which is an isur d'oraita. He's doing that in order to facilitate it. Because if he's selling a b'chor tam or a b'chor that didn't have a mum in it, that'd be an isur d'oraita, and of course you wouldn't buy from him. It has to be some issue, which is only an issue where the rabbanan are imposing a kenas, because that's the nature of the mishnayot that we're speaking about over here, and therefore that's what Rashi explains over here, that we're speaking about an instance where he puts a mum intentionally into the b'chor in order to be matar et be'achila. The truth is, once he's done that, then technically it is mutar to eat it, just a chamim rakones, someone who does that, that they can't eat the b'chor. So this is part of that kenas, that he can't sell it. Below orot, she'enam avudim. And you can't buy from him any of the hides of the animals that have yet to be processed. We'll see why. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, lochim imenu orot shon nekeva. You can buy female hides from him because females can't be kadosh b'kdushat b'chora. Ve'en lochim imenu tzemer meluban. You can't take from him white wool, vitzoi, and wool that has yet to be cleaned. Rabbi lochim imenu tevi ubigadim. But you're allowed to take from him things that are spun or things that are clothing. The Gemara will go through why these some items are permitted, some items are not permitted. Besides Fahim, why can't you buy from him meat or venison? Because the michlaf b'deglav, that's what we said before, or b'degel, it gets mixed up with the meat of a calf, and it has the same coloration. Therefore, you can get confused. It's possible that a person's not an expert wouldn't be able to tell the difference. And you can't take hides that are yet to be processed. How budin zavninan? If they are processed, then we do purchase from him. Why is that? If it's a bechorah, then it's kadosh bechorah. Why can you buy it from him? The answer is, if it was a bechorah, he wouldn't have put so much effort into it. Because if the rabbanon get wind of me doing this, they're going to penalize me and they're going to take away all my profits and all my money. So he wants to move the merchandise quickly because of two things. One is, the less effort he puts in, if he gets caught or if something goes wrong, then penalty won't be so big because he didn't put so much effort into it. So that's why Rashi reads it, that he didn't invest so much into it, so the losses are minimal. The Rambam says that because he's got hot merchandise, he wants to clear it off his shelves quickly because he doesn't want to get caught with it, and so therefore he wants to move it quickly. My time, huh? Why can you buy from him females? Because it's obvious that they're not kadosh, but dushat bechor. The Tanakama, imkein zam achar, nami chayik lizichutei. So then what he's gonna do, he's gonna take all the male hides, and he's gonna cut off the area that indicates that they were males. And he's gonna make them into female hides. Vamar achbarim achlu. But you can see there was a cut over there. You'll say, yeah, some mouse came and nibbled on it over there. And that's why it looks like it does over there. Vidach, beachbarim idea yidia. He says that if it was nibbled by mice, it would look different than when you cut it off. And therefore you can tell the difference. And so therefore, if it is a female hide, you can take it. It's a male hide that's got something cut off of it. You'll know it's cut off of it. Does your mice ate it, then you'll know that mice ate it, and it wouldn't look like the way when he cut it off, and he can't trick you. Obviously, the Tanakama believes otherwise, that he can trick you, and therefore you can't buy those from him. Can't buy from him washed wool and dirty wool. Hashta tzemer luban lo zvanina. You can't buy from him washed wool, so it me buy. Then you can't buy from him regular wool that hasn't been washed. I mean, that goes counterintuitive. If you can't buy from him the thing that he put more effort into, then certainly you can't buy from him the thing that he put less effort into. Ela chadaktoni. It's really one item. Semer meluban mitzoato. Something that's already been cleaned from the tzoa, that is something that you cannot buy from him. Even though he has to make effort, it's not enough of an effort that it would dissuade him from doing it. The value that he creates versus the amount of work that has to be put in is worthwhile, and he would do it, and therefore there's no indication that it's not a bechor when he does such a thing like that. And the Rabbeinu Gershom says that meluban mitzoato doesn't mean it's fully whitened or bleached. That is, just he did the first rinse or the first washing, which is a smaller undertaking, and therefore he'd be willing to do it because he gets much more in compensation, and it's not a lot of effort, and therefore he would risk that in his endeavor, and that's why you can't believe him then that it's not from a Bechor. If you can take spun wool from him, then obviously you can buy bigadim from him. That's a much bigger investment in the item. So my bigadim, bigadim is not something that was tevi, but namte, felt, pressed stuff, things that are not sewn, that are not stitched, that don't use tevi, that don't use the strings or the threads, and therefore they are a different form of presentation. So they involve work, but they involve a different type of work. So the question is, how much he invested again? If he invested enough, then he's not going to be chashud, even if he is chashud, because he invested so much in it, he wouldn't do that if he's going to get caught doing that. So once he reaches a certain threshold of an investment, we believe him or we let him sell it. Next Mishnah, chashud al shvit. Someone who's chashud al shvit, Rashi says, lizroa o lasot schora bismichim. That he is chashud to plant, or he's chashud to do business, to transact with peirot shvit. So those are two different issues. One is that he plants on shvit, the other one is that he's doing business with peirot shvit. Ein lochem imenu pishtan. You can't buy from him flax. Afilu sarak, even if it is comb, but you can't take from him stuff that is spun or woven. So again, first of all, the issue with pishtan is that pishtan really should not be subject to kedushat shvi'it. Kedushat shvi'it only devolves upon items that are edible items, things that are eaten by behemar adam. Pishtan doesn't necessarily have that qualification. The Gemara in other places discusses the zarone, the seeds of the pishtan, which either can be eaten or used for planting. Maybe they are subject to kedushat shvi'it, but that still wouldn't necessarily make it that the pishtan is subject to kedushat shvi'it. So that, just take that in the background. We're not dealing with shvi'it right now, but that pishtan, it's not so clear that it has kedushat shvi'it. Despite that fact, we penalize it with regards to pishtan because we're afraid of what Rashi says. Not just socher b'peirot shvi'it, but lizroa. There's two different problems on shvi'it. Shvi'it has a problem of the peirot shvi'it that have kedushat shvi'it that you can't transact in them. But those are separate restrictions, which is working the land on shvi'it. That doesn't matter whether it's food items or whether it's anything else. You can't work the land on shvi'it. So the pishtan could be a problem that we suspect that he worked the land on shvi'it in order to make that pishtan. So that might be a separate issue, not in transacting in payroll shvi'it. Now the Gemara says, Hashta temi zavnina. If you could buy spun flax from him, arig mi baye, then you have to tell me about woven flax. My arig, tiki. What's arig is these, we call braided chains. It's not exactly a stitching that you would do, but rather it's a form of presentation that Rashi calls sharsharot, chains. Again, they're like these braided chains. You make them out of pishtan before it's already spun into threads. That's what you do with it. So it's something that's earlier on in the process, and that's why it's mentioned as well. Next Mishnah. Someone who's a suspect of selling off truma as chulin, ein lochim imenu afilu maimu melach tibi Rav Yehuda. Can't even buy from him water or salt. Water and salt are not subject to truma, so there's no suspicion that he's selling those as truma now as chulin, because they can't be truma. Nevertheless, so we penalize him completely and say that you can't buy anything from him. And Rav Yehuda, who is konei sim here on other items besides the truma, did not do that by the Bechor, is because selling off truma as chulin, it's a much more common problem than people selling off the Bechor as Chulin or selling off a Bechor that they were Mato Mum in it. And then over here, he was Gozer, a much bigger Kenas, in order to dissuade individuals from engaging in this activity. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Koshesh Bo Zikat Shuma, Umasrot Ein Lochim Imenu. Only things that are connected to Trumot and Masrot can you not buy from him. Things like water and salt that have no Shaykhut to Truma and Maser, that you could buy from him because then there's no suspicion. So obviously the difference between them is whether we're kones buying anything from him out to the problems that he creates by selling truma as chulin. Latuye mai. What does it mean here? Anything that has a zikat truma. What is Rabbi Shimon referencing to? Latuve kirve dagim. That includes the fish innards or the fish hash that he's selling. Demarbe bu shem and zayit. Because sometimes they mix in their olive oil. And olive oil is subject to truma. So we worry about that zikat truma. Something that has a connection to truma. So even though fish hash as a whole doesn't have any din of truma, nevertheless, there are times where mixed in there, the shem and zayit, which does have an aspect of truma to it, therefore you can't buy that from him, even according to Rabbi Shimon. Hal tabcha, tabcha shud, lizvune, tarba da'atma. There was this butcher who was suspect of selling, as Rashi says here, the chelev akliyot, the fat that is around the kidneys, shalai yerek, which is on the thigh. That's what the atma is. The tarbad atma is the fat of the thigh. But it's the fat of the thigh that's restricted, that you're not allowed to eat. And he was selling it off. Bimar dekanto. The question of the word mar is very difficult over here. The Rebbeinu Tam says the word mar means tachlif, in exchange for. So bimar dekanto. He sells it off as regular fats, or Rashi calls kanta entrails. He's selling it off as things that are fats that are mutarim, instead of the real fats that are asurim. Cannot say, Rabba Lizvunei Afilam Gozeh. Rabba penalized him that he's not even allowed to sell nuts now. So he was a butcher selling, misrepresenting fats. Now he says you can't even sell nuts. Amar le Rabba le Rabba, so Rabba, Talmid of Rabba, Talmid of Rabbaye, says, come on, who are you passing like? Rabbi Yehuda? Like Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah? Ik Rabbi Yehuda Afilam Maimu Melach Nami. So he says, if you're going to say it's like Rabbi Yehuda, why are you just penalizing him and say he can't sell nuts? He shouldn't be able to sell anything. He shouldn't be able to be a retailer anymore because he's not trusted. So, Olam, Rabbi Shimon. No, he's passing like Rabbi Shimon. Ubi isura de gufe kansinilei. And we only penalize him about things that are related to the violation. The violation here is fats. So what do nuts have to do with fats? The answer is, stam dardake garu bamgozi. Children are drawn towards nuts, or today there'd be candy snacks. So he used to, v'azil mishabish l'bnei tabche. He used to go and bribe the children of the other butchers, v'gari l'ho bamgozi, and he drew them in. He convinced them with these nuts in order to do his bidding. U'maitile tarba da'atma. He used to bring the fats that the other butchers were throwing away because they were asurim, and they get the kids of those butchers. He paid them off with candy, with nuts, and then they used to bring it to him. And he sold it off as if it was entrails or fats that were mutarim. So he was using the nuts to facilitate his indiscretion. Therefore, Rava was gozer that not only can he not be involved with fats, he can't be involved with nuts, because nuts were the mechanism by which he was able to do what he did. He convinced the kids to help him out and steal the fats from their fathers, bring it to him, and then he sold it off. So that's why he penalized them in that way. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph.